Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Born to Talk Radio Show. I'm your host, Marcia Witeka. Conversations plus connections equals community. Those are my three C's. The heart of my show is, what's your story? It's my belief we all have stories. Some are similar, others are uniquely different. Storytelling brings the passions of my guests to life through our conversations. So be prepared to be entertained, informed, and inspired. Welcome to today's show. Hello, everybody. I'm so excited to be having my guests join me today, Sam Adels and Dana D'Souza. They are from the nonprofit organization Land to Learn. It's a growing movement of food justice and community wellness throughout the garden-based education in New York. It's really in the Hudson Valley in New York, and you're going to hear all about this. So welcome to the show, everybody. It's really nice to have you join me today. And I thought where we could start, which I think is always a great way to start, is to get to know our guests. And Sam, frankly, has been with me before. It's been a while. But for those that didn't hear that show, Sam, why don't you tell our audience about yourself?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, and thanks. It's great to be back. Let's see. I am originally from Philadelphia. I grew up with a family that loved to go camping and loved to spend time outdoors. So when it was time for myself to think about what I wanted to do for my career, I knew I wanted to spend it outside rather than behind a computer all day. And I love that I get to do that at Land to Learn. I get to be outside with kids growing things in gardens instead of always hunched over a computer. So I really appreciate that. I like to camp, I like to bike, I like to hike, I like to garden and teach my six-year-old to garden. Mm-hmm.
I think that's great. We have a community garden. In fact, where my kids went to middle school, there was actually a horticulture class that was there, even when I was growing up in this community where people learned to garden.
Nice.
And, you know, it is really nice. And if you've never planted tomatoes or cucumbers, you know, you really don't know what that's about. But you clearly do, and we'll be talking about that. But Dana, you are joining me for the first time, and I'd like you to tell our audience a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Thank you for having us on your podcast. I've always been a person who's enjoyed the outdoors since a very young age. I originally thought I was going to do something more along the lines of what Jane Goodall did with her career, and I did pursue that for a bit, but everything kept bringing me back home to the Hudson Valley, and I figured out that I actually just wanted to be outside in my own home. So that's sort of the journey that took me back to New York in order to discover that gardening was my true passion. I thought it was just a hobby for a while, but now it's my life.
that's just great. And we're going to learn a lot about this. So, Dana, maybe we can just start with you by just having you share with our listeners, what is the Land to Learn's mission?
Sure. So you did mention it before, but Land to Learn's mission is to grow a movement for food justice and community wellness through garden-based education in the Hudson Valley. We are educating students in our local elementary schools, and we are teaching them education through a garden lens. So we are focusing on environmental science, but also teaching all of the other important things that come with a well-rounded whole education.
I love that. I think that, and it's part of the curriculum at these schools, correct?
Yes.
And how many schools are there? Are there 11, I think? Is that right, or do I have that wrong?
We are in 10 schools.
10 schools, okay. And they're all elementary schools?
Yes, they are, currently.
Got it. All right. Currently, but yet you never know, right? I mean, there was horticulture classes at my high school.
Exactly.
Sam, what brought you to Land to Learn? How is it that you landed over there?
Yeah, sure. So I've had an interesting career journey. Kind of like I said earlier, I've always loved being outside and working outside. So I had an initial kind of career ambition to become a national park ranger and work for the Park Service. So
oh.
when I went
mm-hmm.
to college, yeah, I studied environmental history, which was just naturally what I was interested in, environmental studies and history in college, with this goal to become a park ranger, which I actually accomplished before I finished grad school. So I got a master's
mm-hmm.
in environmental education, which actually brought me to NYU. They have an
mm-hmm.
environmental education master's in a very urban environment, but it was fantastic because I started working for the university doing an outreach program that did field trips with local elementary kids to different parks around the city. And, you know, despite its size, New York has some very sizable parks in the five boroughs. So I was leading field trips, you know, to Inwood Hill Park in Manhattan, Prospect Park in Brooklyn, Central Park, you know, which has some pretty wild areas if you go to the right places.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and it was really fun, but I left the city because I needed to leave the city. I worked on an organic farm in Maine, and that's really where I got, it was great because it was kind of an apprentice program. I got to live
mm-hmm.
in a beautiful house on this farm and stay there for free right on the coast of Maine and learn all about organic agriculture. So it was really fantastic. Then when it came time to leave that, we decided we wanted to settle, my partner and I, in the Hudson Valley. So we didn't know where, we just knew we liked the Hudson Valley. My brother actually worked nearby, so I found this organization that I had not heard of, which Land to Learn, this previous incarnation was called Hudson Valley Seed, and that's who I applied to. Yeah, we changed our name to Land to Learn. But it's been a fantastic journey because I got to sort of marry my love for growing things, which came later in my career, with my love for being with kids outdoors. So now I get to do both.
That's so when did Hudson Valley Seed start? Do you remember the
Hudson
year
Valley
that would
Seed
have been?
Was founded. Yeah, it was founded in 2014, actually, and it's a very grassroots organization. It was basically our founder, Ava Bynum. A couple
mm-hmm.
parents and teachers at a local elementary school, Sargent Elementary in Beacon, New York, and it kind of grew from there fast, quickly. All of a sudden, all the other schools in Beacon wanted this cool program, and then the nonprofit was incorporated shortly thereafter, and now we're in three communities in the Hudson Valley, and many more communities wish they could work with us, but we don't have the capacity to serve everybody.
You don't have a staff. So it started in 2014. When did they actually move over to the term Land to Learn?
That happened in about 2020.
Okay, so not that long. But, you know, mm-hmm. I think this is great. You know, you can only do as much as your staff, as the staff that you have that can provide these services so that you provide precisely what you're looking for. So, Dana, what brought mm-hmm. you to Land to Learn?
So I took a different path than Sam, and I got out of New York as soon as possible after college. I went to the University of Delaware, and I studied wildlife conservation. As I said before, I thought I was going to be studying wild animals in the middle of the jungle or something, and I settled for Florida.
I
moved to Florida and studied lots of birds and sea turtles and different ocean-related creatures. And I actually did a quick stint on the U.S. Virgin Island of St. Croix, and I studied leatherback sea turtles for a bit. So I really got to dip my toes in a couple of different environmental education and environmental studies fields. And I found that I truly enjoyed when I was giving talks to tourists and visitors who were coming to the island and coming to Florida. And I knew that I really wanted to continue education, but in an informal way. And that brought me back to New York, where I worked for other nonprofits at a local nature center. And I started to do garden education in addition to wildlife education. And I fell even more in love with garden education. So then I shortly after that started searching for a job that I knew would have that full time. And I found Land to Learn in 2000, oh goodness, it's been now 2 years, so 2022. I've been here. So I found them in the fall and started working for one of the school years and have since stuck around.
That's true. Well, you know, what I'm noticing based on the years that you're describing, this is after the pandemic too, because, man, that just changed everything. I mean, and
mm-hmm.
how everything happened in our world. So it's nice that was behind you and you could do the things that you're just describing. And it's an interesting combination mm-hmm. that you have, Dana, between wildlife in the animal world and wildlife
mm-hmm.
in the garden world. I just an interesting combination. I like that.
Definitely.
So try to
find a way to incorporate it still.
Yes. Well, I'm a bird brain, so I feed the birds because that means I also feed the squirrels, which annoy people.
Mm-hmm.
My crows also annoy people. I'm so sorry, but, you know, that's just how it works in my life. Because I enjoy being in nature, too, however we can do that. So I think it's terrific that you guys are doing this. And, Sam, what I'd like you to tell us about are some of the programs that you guys offer at Land to Learn.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd be happy to. We have three main programs I can talk about. Our flagship program, really what we call like our bread and butter, is Sprout Ed, and that's sort of the program that, you know, I was describing when I described how the organization was founded. But it's basically garden-based education. It's part of the school day for students, so that's part of what separates our model from a lot of other garden-based education. You know, sometimes it's a camp program. Sometimes it's an after-school program that you have to pay for. With our program, you know, we partner with the school district and the schools. So it's, you know, just a part of the school day for the students. It's totally free, and we're only in public schools.
So, students
really, really get to look forward to it. We develop a close rapport with the students and the teachers, and we really become, you know, community and culture. So we serve over 2,000 kids. You know, it grew in Beacon and started. So now we're across the river in Newburgh, which is a larger community. We're at four schools. And then upriver, up the Hudson River, I'm referring to, in Kingston, New York, which is a larger city as well. We're in two schools currently and hoping to expand to some more in that community. The program really serves kindergarten, first and second graders primarily,
okay.
but we are trying
K-2.
To expand into,
mm-hmm.
yeah, we're trying to expand into the full K through 5 in the coming years. So that's in the works.
I think that would be wonderful.
That's
Sprout Ed, okay.
Yep. Yeah, that's Sprout Ed. So, you know, curriculum-wise, each student gets a garden journal, which they love. We're journaling, we're doing reading, writing, we're doing math, we're doing science, of course, we're doing literacy, and, of course, we're trying a lot of vegetables, and we're teaching kids how to garden and eating the vegetables. Every month there's a vegetable of the month. So grow it in the garden if we can in season. Yeah, it's fantastic. And then we do a taste test. So everyone tries it together. And we find that, of course, you know, maybe if a student is a little bit picky and hasn't had carrots before, if we make it fun and try it together as a whole class, you know, they're a little bit more likely to give that carrot a try. And even if they say
mm-hmm.
no, then they see their classmates like it, then they give it a try.
And so because,
you know,
it's
in that way
June...
we're introducing.
Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry. No, I was just thinking about how exciting this is, and here we are. We're probably, I know by us, we're at the end of the school year, so does that mean that you're not offering these courses during the summertime and then you just return back in September?
Yeah, that's correct. The Sprout Ed program takes place during the school year, yep.
Okay, so you were talking about, I interrupted you and I didn't mean to do so. So you were talking about the different kinds of things that you offer in Sprout Ed. Did you get to finish what you wanted to say?
Yeah, totally. No, it's totally fine. And then since
okay.
we work in Sprout Ed with a primarily younger audience, even though we're trying to expand to K-5, which we hope to do in the coming years, Radical Roots is a separate program, which is a paid teen apprenticeship program for local youth that's centered on food justice and youth leadership. And this is an opportunity that I really like because I get to work with older kids during the summer. You know, so you can really
uh-huh.
get into some topics that you can't necessarily with a kindergartner. You know, you can talk to teens
sure.
a little bit differently. Absolutely. And we partner with two different community partners, one called Green Teen in Beacon, which is an offshoot of Cornell Cooperative Extension. And then in Newburgh, we have an amazing community partner called Our Core. that was founded by a Newburgh high school teacher. So we still have a great relationship and partnership. So the two programs of Radical Roots look differently in Beacon and Newburgh, and we haven't built it up in Kingston yet, although we hope to. But we are going to be hosting 15 teens this summer, and it's great because the teens a lot of time come in knowing, you know, very little about growing food or urban agriculture. And if they spend one and hopefully a couple summers with us, they really leave as community change agents that have done amazing work working towards food justice and feeding their community. And it's a really special program.
Yeah. And then you have one other one, right? Is it?
Yeah.
I'm looking. I would like to Tool Shed. I want people to know that this is a phenomenal website you have. So if you're listening to this podcast, you can literally just type landtolearn.org and you will be seeing pictures and things about this. And so I just wanted to make sure I mentioned that. But go ahead, talk about Tool Shed.
Yeah, sure. So as I was saying, you know, our model is it's pretty staff intensive. We have, you know, one educator who's serving the school, and then we have a lot of schools in these communities that we're not really able to serve currently. So because there was such a long wait list, we decided, you know, what if we had a program that was more of a consulting program where we could offer curriculum and offer garden support for communities that wanted to build up a garden-based education program at their school without having us be the primary educators. So that's what Toolshed really is. It's like a consulting program where we're helping them get their garden-based education programs going at their school or their school district.
I think that's great. And Dana, I think you might have already mentioned this before, but where are your programs actually offered?
Yeah, sure. Our programs are offered in the Hudson Valley. So for those who are not familiar, that's
right.
The part of New York that's north of the city. Actually, our schools are about an hour to an hour and a half north because we are in Newburgh, New York, Kingston, New York, and Beacon, New York in 10 different schools, 10 different elementary schools.
Okay. Okay, so that's interesting. Well, you're right, because if you live where I live, you know, I'm not real familiar with that
area. You might
not know. No, right. And do your classes run year-round? I mean, what
not
your programs?
I'm
sorry, I didn't say that the way I meant it. I know you don't work during the summer, but because you are in the part of the country where you're going to get snow and things like that, I was just thinking about the weather itself and what that would be like in October or November.
Yeah, that's a great question. We do run our programs throughout the entire school year. So instead of having our classes outside, which we actually are able to have our lessons from about the middle of September when we start our programming for the school year until about sometimes even to the end of November, depending on the weather. We always say there's no bad weather, only bad clothes. So our students are usually okay with still going out into the garden because they're very excited about it. Then we will transition over into our indoor classroom lessons, which involve whether we're starting to plant inside when it gets closer to growing season. We run experiments with our students to talk about how water moves through a plant. So we have a variety of different lessons that we can actually accomplish in the classroom, more focused on sort of science and science experiments, I should say.
Well, that's great. So tell us, Sam, what do you guys grow in your school gardens?
So like Dana was saying, you know, we're in the Northeast.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, for listeners in L.A. or elsewhere, you know, it's very different what we can grow. We have a somewhat tricky growing schedule. So what we're trying to do, because we do teach the whole school year, is we align our crop schedule, you know, what we're growing and when, really to have all the food ready for the fall season and then the spring growing season, right, the shoulder seasons. Schools are out for the summer, so it doesn't really make a lot of sense for us to have, like, sweet corn that's ready in August if there's no kids to eat it. So instead, we might plant that corn a little bit later, and we plant popcorn instead of sweet corn so that in October the students are harvesting dried popcorn that we then pop in their classroom as a really tasty treat that was grown in their garden that they harvested, and we're eating it in the winter when we can't be outside in the garden. So it's creative ways like that that we kind of get the most out of the food. But, you know, September and October, because we've had the long summer season, is actually the prime time in our gardens when we have the most food, as opposed to May and June when we have a lot of food. But in September and October, we have more full gardens. So it's just working with, you know, the opportunities that nature gives us. We grow a lot of food. We have like a whole crop plan in the spring as soon as we can get outside, like Dana said, and sometimes in the classroom students will start growing seeds. By April, we have a lot of seeds in the ground, and the goal is always by the end of our school year in June to have a big salad party. So lettuce, chard, parsley, we've got sugar snap peas, we've got radishes, we've got turnips, we've got beets. If we get all that in the ground in April with students, then we can eat it in June. And we celebrate the end of the year with a big salad party. And the idea is that the students have planted these seeds, they've cared for them, and then we can celebrate the end of the year by eating and harvesting fresh food from the garden. So we're trying to grow as much food as possible in the spring. And then come July, it's time to start planting for the fall. So we plant a lot of plants in July that are then going to be ready to greet students when they come back to school in September. So they come back to very bountiful gardens that have melons, squash. We do tomatoes. We do a really sweet, crunchy, juicy lunchbox pepper, they're called. They're like a mini bell pepper that are an absolute hit with the students. Cucumbers are really popular. We've got the corn growing, which is really tall and fun for the kids to, you know, run around in. So the gardens are very full.
And I'm thinking about even when my kids were in school and we had a garden area, is somebody responsible for making sure that everything gets watered properly during times when the students are not there? How does that work?
Yeah, that's actually a good question. So we're, you know, the educators. We're also, you know, the ones charged with managing the garden to be used as an outdoor classroom year-round. So summer can be very hot and occasionally very dry. We have, you know, that's a good opportunity for us to enlist volunteers. So very often it'll be the families of students that they can sign up and they can water a garden. And if they water a garden over the summer, they can take some tomatoes home with them or something like that.
Cool.
We also have had teachers and administrators, you know, like the office staff that are there all summer. They see the garden and it looks beautiful. They've also offered to water the garden. So it's a mixture of volunteers, school staff, and then our land to learn staff.
I could see where scouts would be another group of volunteers where they just want to, you know, Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, Brownies, Cub Scouts, whatever the age might be, that would also probably like to do that as well, huh?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's true. Well, Dana, tell us a little bit more about your community partnerships.
Yes, Sam mentioned a few prior, but I will sort of give you a more in-depth understanding of some of the community organizations that we collaborate with. So since we're in Newburgh and Kingston and Beacon, we get to collaborate with lots of community organizations, which is helpful for us and really gets the word out about our organization, and it helps us get to know our community members. So in Newburgh, we work with the group Our Core for our Radical Roots program, and we also partner with our Boys and Girls Club during the summer, and we help them with their summer programming, and the Our Core Radical Roots get to be there and help with our programming and help with the garden that is run over there. So it's really nice. I believe, Sam, it's a community garden, correct?
It's not really a community garden at Boys and Girls Club. We actually manage that space to use for the summer camp program. Yeah, so that's an opportunity where we have a summer camp. And then we can have our Radical Roots teams that are actually helping us do gardening there, and then also helping us do the program. So you have teens working with the younger generation. So it's this beautiful moment of intergenerational learning in that space.
And in that same vein, in Beacon, we have our Green Teens, which is run by the Cornell Cooperative Extension. They run a similar program where they have a garden that the Green Teens are in charge of at the local rec center, and we get to include a few of their crew members as participants in our summer family program that we run in Beacon. So we will invite families to come, parents, caregivers, and their children or their any child who's with them gets to come and participate in a five-week weekly session where we grow food, we will work on garden chores like weeding and watering, and then we usually make a recipe or two together. And so our teens get to sort of learn how to become a garden educator, and they get to dip their toes in that field. So it's very exciting for them during the summer. And in Kingston, we're also connected to the Cornell Cooperative Extension in Ulster County, and they partner with us for our Vegetable of the Month, as Sam mentioned before. Our Vegetable of the Month is aligned with the Cornell Cooperative Extension, so they actually will have tastings in the school cafeterias and even at some of their local community events, such as farmers markets or other health events that they're trying to promote nutrition in the community for. So it's exciting. We have lots of different connections.
You do, and it's interesting. I happen to have a vegetarian kid, and she started very young, nine. And so I think that having these kids out in the garden, because maybe where they live, that's not a possibility. And to have this interest, you know, and then it's not like they work independently from their families, because their mom and dad and their siblings, maybe their grandparents, aunts and uncles, whomever, their friends, they're all sort of doing this collectively, and then they get to talk about it. It's like, oh my God, I just had a beet. I didn't even know I liked beets. Or, oh my God, I had a beet and didn't really like it very much. I mean, you're not going to like every single thing you grow, but if you've never tried it, and you've never tasted it, and you've never been part of it, then maybe you don't really know. And so I think that's really important, and I think your community partnerships are fabulous. So, Sam, I mean, you've got a great job. What's been the best part about working for you for Land to Learn?
Yeah, that's a good question. It is a really fun job. That's what I tell people. I get to be, you know, half teacher, half gardener. I get to work outside. It's a really fun job. We're a small staff that takes care of each other. I like that. We've got cool benefits like summer Fridays because, you know, school's out in the summer. We don't work Fridays, so those three-day weekends are really nice. But honestly, some of the young people I've gotten to work with are definitely the best part of the job, especially the teens in the Radical Roots program. You know, I've gotten very close with some that have, you know, worked with us 4 or 5 years. And just watching them grow into adults and become leaders in their community is very rewarding for me. I also have gotten really lucky the last 2 years. You know, we're a small community organization, and I live in Beacon. So my daughter goes to Sargent Elementary, where our organization was founded. So I'm really lucky. I am actually my daughter's garden teacher. I get to work at her elementary school. So I have a great relationship with all the teachers and the staff. And, you know, it's just kind of a nice way that I can serve my community. And it's super fun to kind of know all of her friends and be a part of her school life a little bit. Since she's only in first grade, it's fun. I think once she's a little older, she might not want me to be at her school, but for now,
I was just going to say that. Right now, it's great to have Daddy there, but Daddy, as I'm in the fifth grade, and I want you to, like, don't watch me every day. You know, you just don't know what goes down the road. Or it could be just the opposite. It's like, you know, her friends are saying, I wish my dad could come and do this. You know, you just don't know. But I think it's you're giving her such learning tools that have just come naturally to you, which then is going to come naturally to her. And I think I can see why you would really like that a lot.
Yeah.
So what about you, Dana? I bet. What do you like most about what you do?
I always say I have the best job in the world, and I brag to friends about it because, again, I also love the idea of being a teacher and getting to be a gardener full-time. So I think the best part has probably just been making connections with students and my teachers, but also, as Sam said, with our coworkers. It's a very supportive community that we have here at our job. So it's nice to have the connection to food, which I think is such a personal experience for everyone, mm-hmm. and just to share that mm-hmm. with people who love being around food, people who love growing food, and then taking that to my students and my teachers and learning either about their cultures or their family recipes and things that remind them of their favorite parts of their lives. It just makes it so exciting, and it makes my heart very happy.
I bet it does. I can see where it would. And, you know, I'm guessing, but I don't know, can the parents of the children that are in these courses, can they also volunteer to come and help in the gardens?
They are always welcome to help volunteer. We actually had recently, we invited caregivers to come to their students' classes. We run a lesson called Task Box, which means there will be a list of tasks that need to be done in the garden or just activities that are fun for the children to do. And we invited parents and other caregivers to come in and work with their students. And it was a hit. I think everyone enjoyed being in the garden, and it truly exposed mm-hmm. our organization to more of our community members who might not know that the garden lessons are really sort of coming from outside of the school. I think a lot of them think it's just part of their curriculum, and of course that's what happens in the school, but it's nice to show them how special of a program that it is. Sam, do you have anything
right.
else to add to that?
I could see where schools would want to replicate that. What were you going to add, Sam?
No, I think you covered it very nicely. But, yeah, the students loved the opportunity to just show their people around the garden. And mm-hmm. one of the best parts, I think, too, is just, like, the kids really take ownership of the space. It's like, this is my garden. I'm growing this food. So they really take to it.
Right. And I'm guessing that fertilizing and chemicals and those kinds of things are probably also something that you talk about. Is that right?
We talk about compost. Compost is a big part of our
okay.
curriculum. Our gardens are totally organic, and of course they're not certified USDA organic, but we do not spray. We don't use any chemicals. We only use natural
right.
compost. Every garden has a compost pile, so, you know, it ties into science curriculum because we're learning about the animals that are the decomposers that are breaking down the plants to turn it back into soil. So, you know, any one of our kindergartners can tell you all about compost.
I think that's, I just think that that's what's so cool. And what I'm really hoping as people listen to this, because, you know, people can be listening any part of the country. I have a very good friend that's a TK kindergarten teacher. And I'm going to be asking her, you know, do you guys have a garden at your school, and do you do these kinds of things? Because I really can see that the absolute value, regardless of where you live, in spreading the word about it, I think it's just phenomenal. Do you have any idea how many students you reach with your school programs? Did you say a couple thousand?
So we work with 10 schools. You had seen, I think, previously when we spoke, it was 11, and we actually had a local school that sort of graduated from the program. So that's actually why
okay.
we're down to 10.
10, all
yeah,
right.
So it's 10 schools. It's over 2,000 students in those schools across those three communities in the Hudson Valley. So for our in-school program, Sprout Ed, it's over 2,000 students.
Wow. I guess this isn't something you can do online. I mean, right, I was just thinking about, guy, how could you do a Zoom call? But I don't see how the technology would have you getting your hands into the dirt. You have to really physically hands to the dirt, correct?
Yeah, I mean, we're definitely a hands in the dirt, kind of group, and that's what the students love about it, right? You know, they spend so much of their day inside, behind screens.
Mm-hmm.
What we affectionately call garden time, that's what we call our program, among our team. The kids love it because they get to get outside, they get to move around, they get to learn in a new, different way, and they get to get their hands in the dirt, they get to hold worms, they get to plant seeds, they get to water, they get to eat. I mean, what kid's not going to love that?
Right. Yeah.
So during the pandemic, we did have to shift, you know, like so much of the world, we did try it virtually because that's what the, you know, conditions were requiring.
Right.
So we do have a lot of YouTube videos, and if folks want to check them out, mm-hmm. you can check out Land to Learn Garden Education Videos. We have a YouTube channel where we turned a lot of our lessons into videos. They're totally cool. We still use them. But we, you know,
great.
Did that during the pandemic. Yeah.
Yeah, I can see where you would have. I mean, everybody had what was our favorite word back in those days, pivot. We all had to make a pivot to do things differently. So I have a question for both of you, and that is, and I don't care who wants to go first, Dana, I'll go with you. Do you have a favorite plant that you like to grow?
This is one of the hardest questions, so I'm going to
make two. Because there's so many, right?
Yes. My two favorites are tomatoes and husk cherries. I didn't discover growing husk cherries, actually, until I started at Land to Learn because I had never grown those before, but they are the kids' favorite. They're one of my favorites. They're, if people aren't familiar, they're sort of a low-growing. It seems like in the tomato tomatillo family because it has a husk around it, and they are just sour and sweet and just perfect to munch on as a garden snack. And tomatoes have just always been my favorite, and I personally in my home garden am growing 9 different varieties this year, so I keep upping it every single year to try something new.
So did you say, is the term husk like a corn husk? Is that the term, husk cherries?
Yes.
I've never heard of that. Does it grow on a vine? How does it grow?
It grows low to the ground, similar to how squash would sort of spread in every direction. It's like sort of like a circular, but you could lift up the leaves, and underneath you'll find the little husks attached to little stems, and the kids can actually pop them off. And the way that you know that they are the most ripe and ready to be picked is when the husk actually starts to deteriorate, or at least that's what I tell the kids. I said, if you want it the sweetest, wait until you see that husk sort of starting to turn into what looks like a spider web around the cherry. That's my favorite time to eat it, but you can eat it before and it's a little more tart.
I'm going to press you a little bit further on this term husk cherries because, you know, when I think of cherries, I think of, you know, it has a little stem on it. They're red. They have a skin. Is the skin of the cherry the same thing you're referring to as the husk of the cherry?
No. So picture a tomatillo.
Okay, explain that a little bit further then.
Sure. Picture a tomatillo, which has a papery sort of covering around it. So you actually have to peel that open. That part is not edible as far as I know. And when you get to the inside, it looks almost exactly like an orange cherry tomato or, the size of a cherry tomato. And when you bite into it, it's similar that it has seeds inside that look like in a sort of gelatinous area. I can't even describe how it doesn't taste like a tomato, but it looks like it's going to taste like a tomato. Sam, would you say that that was a good description of it?
Yeah, definitely. They're related to tomatoes, so they're in the nightshade family. So they're basically like a tomatillo. They look like a cherry tomato, but it comes in a little wrapper. And I feel like they have this really nice sort of fruity, almost like mango-like quality to them, but you're eating a tomato. So it's... Yeah, it's really cool. They're also sometimes called ground cherries.
Yeah.
Do they sell them in your market?
Husk tomato. I don't know. I don't know if I've ever seen them at the market.
Yeah. I've
never seen them at a farmer's market. It's one of those things that might be hard to grow in large quantities for profit, but that's why it's kind of fun when you have these little gardens we can grow somewhat unusual things. And like Dana said, they're super popular with the students. They're fun to pick and they taste great.
So they are on the sweet side of life as opposed to the sour?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Got it. Wow, well didn't we all learn something new right now? So Sam, do you have a favorite plant that you like to grow?
I mean, like Dana, I think it's a tough question. I have a lot. I really love to grow cucumbers. They're super easy to grow, and I just happen to love cucumbers, so it's nice. They make a great snack on a hot day to just pick and eat fresh while I'm gardening, because they're refreshing and crunchy and fun. You know, kids love to kind of see a cucumber freshly harvested. We can slice it right up in class, and we can snack on a cucumber. That's really fun. I love growing carrots because I think I love to grow what I like to eat. I've always loved carrots, and there's just something really fun, you know, when the students get to pull a carrot out of the ground, and that's a totally new experience for them, and you could just see their eyes light up and their heads kind of explode, you know, as they see what they recognize as a carrot coming from their school garden. It's so fun to pull carrots with kids, and all we have to do is, you know, rinse them off with the hose, and we can, you know, crunch on fresh carrots. So that's another fun one I enjoy. Yeah, I'm also a huge basil fan, so there's no shortage
just
of basil
gonna go there.
In the summer.
Okay.
Yeah, during any time, you know, I love growing what I call like a sea of basil in my home garden so that I can make as much pesto as possible for the whole summer season.
You know, it's so funny. I do a Facebook Live prior to coming on the air, and I was trying to figure out how I could hold my laptop and not drop it, because I have so much fennel growing in my backyard right now. And for
fantastic.
Those of you that may, it smells just like licorice. And mm-hmm. I've actually had monarch of what is it called, yellow wing butterflies. I can't remember the swallowtail. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
Where they've actually
mm-hmm.
put their chrysalis there. And they've actually grown there, and I've actually had them go from there, which was just the most
awesome thing.
Oh, it's so cool. And that fennel just grows, no offense, with quotes around it, like a weed. I mean, it just,
mm-hmm.
I have to continue to just cut it down because it's blocking the view of my, looking at the fountain in my backyard, because the fennel is, you know, 47,000 feet tall, because it just grows so happily. You know, so I was curious if you grew any herbs or anything like that. So you grow basil. That's cool. What about parsley? Do you grow parsley?
Yeah, we always grow parsley. That's one that does really well in the spring here, so that we can make a fresh salad dressing with the students. We put parsley in the salad dressing. We also can put parsley in the salads we make, but it's also a really tasty one to eat fresh. So we have a lot of herbs. We do mint. We do thyme. We do sage.
Mm-hmm.
We do rosemary, you know, things that are really smelly, really sensory, fun for the students to kind of pick and sniff and smell and interact with, and, of course, you know, nibble on if they want.
You
chives,
bet.
Yeah.
That's all of those things. And, you know, if you're mindful about how you're cultivating them, then that's another thing that I think is important. And I know if people wanted to follow you on your journey, Dana, you would probably just recommend that they come to your website. Would you say is there another way that they can follow you besides?
Yeah,
I think Sam mentioned YouTube.
Mm-hmm. Our website is a great source to find the connection to all of our different social media pages. But people can also follow our Instagram page and our Facebook page at Land to Learn, just those three words. And we have our YouTube channel. We're not on TikTok yet, but we're hoping to be in the next year. We'll see.
Okay. All right.
And the best way to find out information is actually to sign up for our newsletter. It goes out monthly.
There you go.
And people can sign up for that on our website and to learn more about our upcoming events and when our next fundraising event is.
That's terrific. So Sam, you talked about Radical Roots a little bit earlier, but we do have a little bit of time left, and I thought, is there anything more that you wanted to say about that youth leadership program? What is it, middle school kids or is it high school kids? I can't remember what you said regarding that.
Yeah, I'd be happy to talk more about it. So Radical Roots is the sort of umbrella term for our program that is youth leadership. So that's high school kids for us mostly.
Okay.
I would say the majority are, like the early, all the way up through the end of high school. And it's a teen apprenticeship program, so we definitely want to offer a paid summer job. So it's a paid summer job for them.
Cool.
And the main program, you know, since our main program works with elementary students, like I said, this is really nice to kind of be able to offer jobs to teens in the community, to train them to learn to grow food for themselves. That's also just nice to be able to offer them summer jobs. So like we were saying earlier, they get to help in our public programs. So like at the Boys and Girls Club, where we run the school gardening program for younger kids, our teens, you know, as part of their job, they get to help plan that garden. They get to make decisions as to what's growing where, and then they get to also be sort of co-facilitators and get a taste of what it feels like to be an educator and to be a mentor to younger kids in their community. And that's really special. Okay. Like I said, the intergenerational learning is fantastic. And, you know, a lot of times it's kids that know each other from the neighborhood, you know, and they're sitting on their laps, mm-hmm. and it's really fun. Yeah, and it's just really nice. And then some of the students get to see what it feels like to be a teacher, and then they can decide if they want to pursue that as a career. They also get to learn all about growing, and a lot of the teens have decided to pursue that. That's one of the, I think, things that I love about it is we have a good track record of serving some students over multiple seasons, that you kind of watch them grow into leaders in their community, and they've done some incredible things. We've got one currently, you know, she made it to college and she's studying agriculture. She got an amazing apprenticeship, a paid apprenticeship last summer. Two teens started a community garden in Newburgh, you know, a brand new garden that didn't exist. They started it. One started a seed library at the local library. And one of our oldest teens that we've worked with the longest, she's in graduate school and about to become a full-time teacher, which is fantastic. She still comes back in the summer and works for us as a gardener. So we've developed these really nice relationships with a lot of teens. And that's, you know, just something that I think is very special.
You bet it is. So, Dana, I think this is pretty obvious, but why is garden-based education so important?
Yeah, those examples that Sam just shared really speak to why garden education is so important. But I can give you sort of a understanding of what we think our four impacts are the most on our education.
Yes, please.
We think nutrition, their social emotional skill building, environmental awareness, and academic success. Those are the four things that we know that our garden-based education is truly impacting for our students. We know that with nutrition, the children are empowered to try eating vegetables by growing them, making recipes, and just interacting with them in a fun environment. And when it comes to social-emotional learning, our students learn in the garden how to be patient, waiting for something to grow, how to be gentle when they're interacting with a bug, how to cooperate with each other. And really, observation and mindfulness comes into play in our gardens because we really hope that the garden is a space that feels safe and a spot that our students can find sort of just a calming sensation. If they need a moment from class or they need a moment from our education, they are allowed to step aside. During class, I know they have to ask their teacher to take them because they are young, but definitely the garden I've seen be utilized as a space for just a place to connect and sort of separate from what's going on with the rest of the day. For academic success, our students show increased focus in the classroom according to some of our teachers and even their school attendance. They've shown that there's an increase because maybe they're just very excited to attend garden time in the next few days. And the last impact of environmental awareness, we find that it activates students' interest in nature and the food systems and allows them to become a generation of informed, engaged, and capable environmental stewards and pass that message on to their community and hopefully be the ones who are leading our future into one that's full of good food and good people and just people who want to make a difference in the world in the best way possible.
Yes. So I'm just curious. You've been doing this for a while. So, Sam, do you have a particular moment or a memory that just sticks out to you with your experience at Land to Learn?
Yeah. I mean, I have a lot. Sort of I got to share a little bit how special it is for me to, you know, work with my daughter. So shelving that one, which is fantastic, putting that aside, I guess when I was – a couple years into the job, you know, we had a student who what you were saying, Girl Scout. She was a Girl Scout troop, and they volunteered, and they came, and they worked in the summer helping us get the garden going. Then I had her again as a second grader in the fall, and she loved kale so much that she, you know, told her mom how much she loved kale. They started actually getting a plot in the community garden in Newburgh, you know, so we not only turned her on to kale, but she just started gardening with her mom, and her mom came and told me how much they like making kale smoothies, and, you know, I could just really feel the impact. That was one of the first, like, sort of success stories I got, where I was like, wow, not only did the student, like, appreciate the program, but, you know, they started, you know, gardening in their own life and eating kale smoothies at home, and I was like, okay, I think I'm doing something special here.
You know, and I would imagine, listen, you're a kid. You're not going to like everything. You're not, you like kale, but you hate squash. Or you like beets, but you don't like XYZ, turnips. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not going to love everything. But the reality is that you're being exposed to it. If you've never tasted squash, you don't really know if you like it or you don't like it. Or maybe you really didn't like the squash, but your grandma made it a different way, and it's like, oh, now that you put bacon on it, I kind of like it. You know, you just don't know. And for you, what about you, Dana?
I have so many also, even though I haven't been here nearly as long as Sam. But most recently actually was a moment that stood out to me. When I was speaking with a teacher while my students were watering, she pointed to one of my students and she said, I don't know if Emily told you, but she wants to be a farmer when she grows up. We're doing a project on future careers in their second grade classrooms. And she said, of all of the careers that were offered, she said she wanted to be a farmer because she has the best time when she goes to garden time. So that made me feel really good.
Is Emily your daughter? Sister.
No, she's just a student of mine.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry,
so,
okay.
No,
all
that's
right, go
fine.
On.
She just, it made me feel so great that there was some impact on garden time, on the future of what our students really want to be when they grow up. Yeah, it made me just realize what the impact was that we have.
Mm-hmm. You don't know, you know. I would imagine, I would guess that you get feedback from the families, from the parents, right, that they're telling you, oh, my gosh, you aren't going to believe
we
this.
We do try.
Do you get that kind of?
Yep.
I bet you do.
We'll send out surveys to ask parents sort of how their child feels about garden time, and the best ones that we get back are when parents reply and say, well, I've never talked about kale ever in our household, and my child keeps asking me to buy kale. So
That's funny. Very
exciting to sort of help them realize that their child might like something that they've never thought to offer them before.
Right, because maybe the parents don't like it, you know? So it's like, I'm not fixing them kale. I don't like kale. But when the kids going, but mommy. Yes. Yes,
we have a phrase
called
don't yuck someone else's yum. So we hope that the parents will still share things that they don't like.
Don't yuck someone else's yum?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, that's hilarious. I bet you that is spoken more often than people might realize because it's true, right? I think that is so funny. I'm trying to think, when I think about my daughter being a vegetarian so young, we grew some things in our yard, but not a lot. We just were very mindful of what she would eat and what she wouldn't eat. But we do have a little bit of time left, and I would love to be able to offer this to you, which is, what's up next for you guys? What's coming up for you in the future?
Sure. We are actually celebrating our 10-year anniversary as Hudson Valley Seed started in 2014. So we will be celebrating later this year in the fall with a jamboree. That's going to be some celebration for us to fundraise so that we can continue our mission of serving the schools that we currently teach in and hopefully expand into more grades at those current schools and eventually all of the schools in each of our districts that we work in. So we just hope that as we can fundraise and expand and contact all of our students at all the different levels of their education, that they'll have a connection to Garden Time throughout their entire schooling journey.
I love that. That's terrific. I'm back on your website right now. For those people that live nearby, there are jobs and internships that people can visit, and there's opportunities to volunteer. And let's face it, there are opportunities to donate. You might be listening to this in Los Angeles, but you would like to support what you guys are doing. And I think that, and you have, I believe you have a newsletter too. Is that, do I have that right?
Yes, we do.
Okay. So people
on our
can
website,
also,
if you go, if they get to stay informed, they can sign up for our website.
Right, for
our
newsletter. Right, exactly. Well, I think that, I mean, you know, you don't know, you know, I say this to people all the time, you just don't know what a conversation can mean to somebody else, because maybe somebody's listening in Montana and they're thinking, wow, we could do something like this at our school.
Mm-hmm.
And you have now inspired others to consider doing something like that in the schools that they operate out of. That's what I think is the beauty of podcasting. When I first started doing this, when I first started doing the Born to Talk radio show, I literally was in a studio here in the community that I live in by the Los Angeles airport. But that meant that my guests had to travel to the studio in order to be on my show, and I did it that way for 3 years. Imagine how my door opened wide, I mean left arm out, right arm out, when I can have incredible guests like you guys that don't live anywhere near where I live, but yet you have an incredible story to tell, and that is the beauty of podcasting. I must say that's why I've never met a stranger. And I certainly love, you know, supporting people, their books and the books and things that they've written. But people that know me well know that I also am very, very supportive of the nonprofit world. Maybe because I was in that nonprofit world for a very long time, and I understand what it means to work in a nonprofit. And I want to thank you guys. Do you have any closing remarks you'd like to have for me, or do you feel like you've said all that you've wanted to say? Because we have a couple more minutes, if you'd like to.
I would just say thanks for having us, Marcia.
Well, it's great, Sam. And, you know, I guess you're going to be having this big 10-year anniversary this fall, and I'm sure people will be able to see that on your social media and follow you along. And, you know, I think that what you do is really, really important. And I think that people listening that have this interest, that have this desire, that want to have, I liked your four impact, your impacts that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Would you mind just repeating those four impacts one more time for us?
Sure. Our four impacts are academic success, nutrition,
social and emotional.
Social and emotional skills, and environmental awareness.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty darn cool. And I think that does impact people's lives, not just the children, but their families, the siblings within that family, maybe even grandma and grandpa that never really thought about this before, and now they have a connection with those grandchildren. I just love it, and I just want to thank you both so much for sharing what it is you love with our audience today. This has just been a great podcast, and I've really enjoyed having you both join me today.
Thank you so much, Martha. We appreciate you spreading our mission to the wider audience.
You're welcome. Sam, you know, we can always make a part three someday down the road, so you just keep that in mind.
Let's do it. We'd love to come to LA.
Oh, there you go. So I'm going to let you guys get on with the rest of your day. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And don't forget to join me next week, because it'll be Monday, and that'll be the last Monday of June. How did this happen so quickly that we are approaching the end of June? It's beyond me. All right, everybody. Well, have a great rest of your day, and we'll say bye-bye for now.
Ever felt unsafe in your rideshare? We all seem to have a rideshare horror story. I'm Will Coleman, CEO of Alto, the world's safest and most consistent ride experience. Stop riding with strangers and start riding with professionally trained employee drivers who aren't in a rush and will never leave you behind. Expect a company-owned SUV that's cleaned and safety checked daily. Your first ride is free with code TRYALTO. Download the Alto app or visit ridealto.com/radio to learn more.
Start your summer road trip at Midas and get up to $30 off your next repair service. Plus, get a free closer look vehicle check to make sure you're road trip ready. If you need brake service, an alignment check, or tune-up, hit up Midas for up to $30 off. For more details, request your appointment at Midas.com.